And what a great Tuesday it is. Relentless Positive Radio Focus with Paul W. Smith and the team is here. And it's an especially good moment because we're starting the show with an old friend who used to do reports for us when I did the morning show for nearly 30 years. And she has been around a very long time, the Chief Economist Managing Director at KPMG US, periodically advising the Congressional Budget Office, the Council of Economic Advisors for the White House on a nonpartisan basis, a fellow of the National Association of Business Economics. The list goes on and on, but most importantly for me, Diane earned her bachelor's and master's degrees in economics with top honors from the great University of Michigan. And she regularly contributes her time and other resources to support the economics department at U of M. She earned a master's degree in finance and strategic planning with top honors from the University of Chicago Booth School of Business, where she also remains involved. What a pleasure and privilege to welcome back to the program Diane Swank.
Paul, it's just so great to be here.
It's so great to have you
here.
It's
kind of a homecoming, you know? I love coming back. This is wonderful.
It is a homecoming, and there's a lot of people here who can't wait to hear you speak, so we're thrilled to get you on before you take the stage. You've got a forecast that, frankly, has been stronger than many economists have expected. You also describe inflation as hotter for longer. Are we entering a period where Americans have to choose between stronger growth and higher prices, in your opinion?
Sadly, I am worried about that. What I worry about is, much like, you know, stock market returns compound over time and people build wealth, mm-hmm. we've seen 5 years now of the post-pandemic inflation compound, and the level of prices are out of reach for too many. And that gets to the inequality that we're seeing. I was looking up at the numbers, and it's something that I focus a lot on as a labor economist. Back in the 1970s, which when I grew up as a kid here in the Detroit area,
yeah.
you know, that was a really hard decade, the 70s. And we had double-digit inflation, we had stagflation, we had high unemployment. Yet something unusual is, you know, inequality hit its low on income inequality, so post-World War II low, in 1980. And there wasn't as much wealth because the equity markets didn't do anything. So the inequality wasn't there. And the pain that we felt as an economy was more shared than it is today. And now you have this sort of inequality where you've got a very small percentage of households carrying economic gains and buoying inflation, even as the majority of households look at the economy and say, I think we're in a recession. I don't feel good, because they've seen their purchasing power erode.
Diane Swank, Chief Economist, Managing Director, KPMG LLP, you in fact ended one of your forecasts by saying, we are closer to the Gilded Age than the 1970s because of rising inequality. So for the average American listening today, what's the single economic indicator that we should all pay attention to over the next year or so to understand whether conditions are truly improving for most people, not just for financial markets?
Yeah, the biggest issue is, can you easily afford your food and to fill up your gas tank? And what I worry about is there's an echo effect from the crisis in the Middle East, currently in a ceasefire, and we hope that sticks. But, you know, fertilizer costs, diesel costs, all the things that go into our food supply, once it comes to fall harvest and into 2027, I worry that that could be another bump up. And even though the Federal Reserve doesn't have control over food prices and all of those kinds of things, those are important because they're at the same time that the service sector is still showing a lot of inflation. And that is hard. It's harder for people to afford health care than it once was. Elder care is really hard, a growing problem in the United States, and there's fewer people working in it now.
Diane Swank, you've identified several major risks, from the Strait of Hormuz and global energy disruptions, tariffs, trade uncertainty, persistent inflation. If you had to choose one event or trend that most dramatically alters your outlook over the next 12 months, what would it be and why? Now, I'll take off the table the solving of this Iran war, because it's Tuesday.
We don't know what's going to happen by Friday.
My God, by Friday, any number of things could happen.
Yes,
so
yes.
To me, it doesn't count. Frankly, to me, even when they sign the papers, if they do sign them on Friday, it doesn't count because they lie, and they always have. But what else is there?
You know, sadly, right now, and I hate to say this, is what matters the most in terms of the overall economy is the stock market. And I never thought I would be saying that. And it's not because I think that's a good thing. I think that's because we've got 20% of households accounting for more than 50% of consumer spending, and they're carrying the economy. That is hard for those who are lower income, the bottom 80%. You know, I mean, come on, the majority of households here. And it's part of the reason why we see this decoupling between what consumers say about the economy and how the economy performs on paper, because it looks better on paper than it feels to the majority of Americans. Mm-hmm. But that stock market buoyancy, the wealth effects have never been this large. And they're adding about 1% to consumer spending right now. When consumer spending was growing less than 2% last quarter, that's over half just because of the wealth.
I can't help but feel that with AI, something I clearly don't understand as well as my kids do, for example, that we might be missing the boat on one of those opportunities that is before us. But I don't know where to go or how to play that. And other than, I know it's happening in our 401ks and our mutual funds and all of that. But what do you think about, you've called it one of the brightest spots in your forecast, is the AI investment boom. Talk to me.
So there's two things about it. One is it is supporting investment that's helping the economy grow. It's also, though, the costs associated with AI are coming before the productivity gains, which means for most people is that it's more expensive because we've got this huge boom going on. And it's not that the companies that are investing in this are constrained by money. They're constrained by physical infrastructure. And there's a lot of backlash to it, which I'm tracking as well, because I think it's important to understand where people are seeing it. And AI has become, it's got a lot of potential. As a cancer survivor myself, you know, I was in the World Trade Center on 9/11. 20 years later, in the middle of a pandemic, I had cancer everywhere in my body. I had 13 surgeries during the middle of the pandemic.
Oh, my.
And I'm still here and kicking, and I'm really glad. And, you know, the thought that...
You are the picture of good health.
Oh, thank you, Paul.
You really are.
I run a lot. I work out like crazy, and I still got some issues I'm dealing with. But you know what? You got to keep going. Never give up, as my dad always said. But it is important because, you know, like, to think that I could have caught some of these cancers earlier, you know, instead of in the middle of a pandemic, when, can you imagine when it was like, I mean, I was literally in and out the same day, double mastectomy, reconstruction, you know, in and out the same day because I had cervical to have a hysterectomy. I mean, that was a horrible experience.
Yeah.
And it was really hard. So, you know, I think that there's a lot of promise, but it's going to take a while to figure out how to use it right. And I think we need to be thoughtful about that.
Diane, you mentioned something about controversies or things holding back. You're talking about data centers?
Yeah, there's a lot of backlash. And also, there's a lot of companies states and people that are upset about how AI is being used on children and bullying children. And those are things that are legitimate concerns. And we need to think about the social contract as well.
Chief Economist, Managing Director of KPMG LLP, the keynote speaker here at the Detroit Economic Club, and you got to hear from her first. Diane Swonk, so good to see you.
Oh, it's great to see you, Paul.
We continue in Focus on WJR. It's so nice to see a good friend sitting across from me again, right after Diane Swonk, who I never get to see. My next guest I happily get to see rather often because, frankly, I do business with him. He is the president and chief executive officer at DFCU Financial, and I thank Ryan Goldberg, our guest, and Jim Cowper, the chairman, for sponsoring these broadcasts. We really appreciate it. And by the way, thanks for sitting in for me and hosting the show. I hear you do a pretty good job. I'm always traveling, so I don't hear it.
Well, thank you, Paul, and I have a high standard to uphold. So trust me, I don't take the opportunity lightly. I've got to deliver, and I do my best. So
well,
thank you.
I think you're going to be filling in again soon before you know it. You have been expanding the footprint and services of DFCU Financial. It's been rather incredible. It's what caught my attention, frankly. What's driving that growth strategy, and where do you see the biggest opportunities right now?
So, Paul, the objective of the company is to ensure that we are taking our consumer banking platform, our wealth management platform, and our commercial banking segment to as many prospective members as we can. We believe that we have the offerings that are available to serve the vast majority of any of the retail opportunities that are out there, the small and medium-sized businesses, and for those that need investment advice, whether it's something as simple as a small investment for a new baby to plan for college, all the way up to inheritances, business liquidity events. The goal of our organization is to meet that opportunity head on. And with that, we're also expanding into new markets. So we found that there's a number of locations that are underserved. We've opened 3 new branches in the past 6 months. One was out in Allen Park, one was in White Lake, and then our most recent new office in Bloomfield Hills. So it's really the objective of taking our very, very good team to the market, giving ourselves the opportunity to meet more needs of people that are looking for banking advice and options.
And the good news, too, is for Michiganders, those of us who might also go to Florida from time to time, you've expanded into Florida. In fact, you originally came from Florida, if I recall.
That's right. My early years in banking were in Florida. That's where I grew up. And to your point, we find that there's a great deal of connectivity between Michigan and Central and West Florida, and we've done 3 acquisitions in that market. So we have a Tampa Bay presence, an Orlando presence, and now one that you're familiar with, Paul, down in Naples and Fort Myers. So 20% of our company is now in the Florida market, and we're getting great reviews about how the Michigan members are able to use our franchise when they're moving, whether they have vacation plans, second home. So it's really been a nice connectivity to further serve the people that have built the company.
And if you want to know just how well they're doing and what a great job Ryan Goldberg as president and chief executive officer at DFCU Financial is doing, they were founded in 1950. That's not that long ago. As Ford Engineering Employees Federal Credit Union, with just 7 members and a cigar box holding $35. Today, DFCU Financial has grown into a $7 billion, and it's probably higher than since this was printed, $7 billion organization serving more than 240,000 of us as members. Myself and Kim are members.
Yeah. No, you're exactly right. And with the acquisition that we just made in Orlando, we're up to about $8 billion in assets. And it's more than just what's the size of the organization, but it's how we go to market. And we really are focused on meeting the needs of members, providing the financial guidance and advice that they need, matching those with appropriate services. And one of the hallmarks of the company is we have a revenue sharing component. So when the company is successful, we pay part of our profits back to the members that have contributed to our success. And we've been doing that for 20 years. And Paul, this year we just went over the $500 million mark of our profits distributed back to the membership, which is in a credit union. The financial cooperative model allows us to do that because we don't have shareholders. We're member owned.
If you didn't catch that, let me put it as simply as I can. There are several ways you get money back when you work with DFCU. And you can contact them and talk to them about the different ways. But you do pay money back, and I can't believe that amount you just said.
Yeah.
And the other thing I can't believe, and again, they're $8 billion now. They're big. Don't get me wrong. They're big. But you've kept that small feeling, which I like. I like, for example, when I dealt with the Kevin Murawski for a home equity loan line of credit thing, when I mentioned to you that he was doing well, you gave me his whole history. Mm-hmm. You know your people. Mm-hmm. You know your employees.
Well, and that's the key is there's so much focus now, Paul, on technology. And we want to provide the means by which people can engage with the financial institution in the way that they want. And we strive to create a great digital experience for people. But it gets back to your point. It's really around people first. And whether they're millennials all the way through some of our elderly members, they really appreciate the face-to-face opportunities to meet with the teams. That's why we're investing in branches, we're investing in people. But that's really the distinguisher. The digital component is necessary. We invest there to allow for a seamless interaction with the company. But when there's something significant, whether it's a loan, whether it's a retirement planning, purchasing a home, people want to talk to people. And that's really the first and foremost thing that we put in place.
Well, because this isn't our expertise. This isn't what we do. And there's something extra special about sitting across from somebody who knows exactly what we need to do or what we should do or suggestions of different ways we can look at things. Financial wellness is a big topic, and DFCU Financial really plays a role helping members build long-term financial confidence.
Well, and to that point, we strive to have the most attractive products that are out there for people. But if we're not doing a good job of understanding and teaching people how should they use these products, we're falling short in our mission as a credit union. And we offer free financial wellness seminars covering topics such as budgeting and credit management, and how do they plan for retirement, how do they protect themselves against fraud. And these virtual sessions are offered weekly, including even in some evening hours, so that this is accessible and convenient for members. And one of the things that we really focus on doing, Paul, is partnering with employers, schools, and community organizations so that we can bring this financial education directly into the communities we serve.
You know, you have differentiated yourself. You've talked about it, remaining relevant with the younger members. And looking ahead, what do you look at for what represents success for DFCU Financial? What's that look like over the next few years? What are you most focused on achieving, Ryan?
One of the things that we take a lot of pride in, Paul, is just the recognition that we get in the industry. So recently we were named one of America's best credit unions for 2026 by Newsweek. We've been recognized as the best and brightest company to work for in Michigan. Another employee accolade was received down in our Florida market. So we really want to get that third-party validation. But the most important thing is, are we helping members be successful? And are we running the company in such a way that our satisfaction scores are high and that we are able to achieve in a way that allows us to pay back to the members through product value and our robust cash dividend program that's directly tied to our success?
Forbes magazine's best credit unions in Michigan, a number of years. Newsweek America's best credit unions, a number of years. Obviously, what you're doing is working. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me, Paul.
And frankly, as a member of the credit union now, I thank you for doing the work you do. Ryan Goldberg, President and Chief Executive Officer at DFCU Financial. I ran into the chairman, Jim Cowper, at the Cards and Cigars. Matter of fact, we shared a cigar.
That's great.
It's, you know, it's harder and harder to find a place where you can share a cigar.
The world's getting more constraining.
It is. But we still have places, and we're going to find them. Ryan Goldberg, President, Chief Executive Officer, DFCU Financial. We continue in focus with Paul W. Smith at 12:29. I got to remember to always wish you a happy birthday because, you know, we take for granted that we might have people around us that can wish us a happy birthday. Not everybody does. So there you are. Happy birthday to you. Jared Halpern is checking in. Busy guy that he is, the Fox News correspondent, WJR contributor, and following around where the president is going, what the president's doing, has kept you very busy, Jared.
It's a little bit easier when he's a few time zones ahead, but it's been busy for President Trump, to be sure, with a lot of questions still about what this memorandum of understanding is an understanding of with Iran. You know, notably, President Trump is not offering a lot of details. This morning asked at the G7 kind of when they are going to release the details and the text. He said after the formal signing. That is supposed to be Friday. And then the president said, I'll do a news conference and I'll read it word for word. So it's not misreported. So I guess we'll wait a few more days. That being said, lawmakers on Capitol Hill are getting pretty impatient, Republicans and Democrats alike, who are very eager to know what the details of this memorandum of understanding is, what it is that is expected of Iran, timelines, what a sanctions relief looks like, who is managing the Strait of Hormuz, who is managing a lot of things, right? And so yeah. I think that there are still – listen, there is stability. The markets are reacting. Oil prices have dropped substantially, but there are still some big question marks about the maybe the stability. Because the other kind of wild card in this is Israel and Lebanon. Iran says that they won't sign a final deal until Israel withdraws from Lebanon. Israel says they are not going to do that. The U.S. has said officially Lebanon is not part of this. At the same time, this morning, President Trump accused Netanyahu of not being as responsible as he should be with Lebanon and kind of urging him to end those operations. So there are still, I think, a lot of hurdles to get over before it's signed, sealed, and delivered.
My friend, it is Tuesday. Friday is about a world away. And if we make it to Friday and they actually sign anything, I'll be thrilled and shocked. And then we still won't know what it really means.
Well, not only that, but that is actually when the work begins, right? Because this memorandum of understanding is intended to extend the ceasefire, reopen the Strait of Hormuz, end the U.S. naval blockade, and then get both sides to the table to start hammering out the nitty-gritty of sanctions relief, grabbing the nuclear material, and all of the things that go into, you know, a peace treaty or a peace deal. The president also suggests today he might have Congress take a look at this. If that is the case, that could add some complications. Recall that was one of the kind of criticisms of the Obama nuclear deal, is that it wasn't ratified by the Senate. It didn't have any sort of congressional oversight. There are Republicans on the Hill that would like to change that this time around. And today, President Trump was asked about it and said he hadn't really thought about it, but sure, he'd be open to doing that. So let's see if Congress can get involved, too, because that always makes things easier.
Unless you know otherwise, I think everything with the G7 seems to be going swimmingly. He seems to be playing nice, getting along with everyone. Everyone seems to be getting along with him. He and Macron are now best friends again. he kissed Mrs. Macron on both cheeks, which is the way you're supposed to do it, I guess. So everything seems to be going well. But back, I got to ask you this, though, since you cover all this stuff, Jared Halpern, Fox News correspondent, WJR contributor extraordinaire. What is this America 250 fight attack that was apparently nipped in the bud at the last minute? Tell me everything you know about that.
Yeah, this is a concerning story. This the FBI today revealed that they may arrest and are continuing to investigate. Well, they've arrested five people who are facing charges and believe that there could be about two dozen others that were involved in some sort of plan to attack the UFC fight on Sunday. They had, according to these court filings, these channels they were talking on social media apps to use drones and sniper fire to kill people who they said were elites and taking money from AIPAC and covering up Epstein. And one of these suspects in Ohio had amassed a large cache of weapons, and it was actually, according to the court filing, according to the affidavit that was put forward by the FBI, that individual's mother. He was 19 years old. His mother called local police outside of Cincinnati, said she was concerned about her son's behavior. They came, investigated, arrested him, started talking to him. Got a sense of how broad this conspiracy appeared to be, got the Secret Service involved, and they started working it from there. They said this all happened on Wednesday ahead of that Sunday event. The Secret Service and FBI today described it as still ongoing. There are three people who were arrested in California who are in custody, and as I said, at least one in Ohio, and they are kind of running this down. But you know, one of the things that is tough, and I've talked to counterterror officials about this, is trying to ascertain what is aspirational and what is actionable, right? And when you have a plan like this, it's very alarming. You have to act very, very quickly to run this down. And that seems to be what is happening right now as these arrests are being made and this investigation is unfolding. But we're learning about it today. As I said, they started this last week, a couple of days before the big UFC fight. And no one was the wiser, it would appear, at the UFC event, right? That event forward.
I got several things I want to say, even though the music's playing. I'm going to say it real quick. First of all, the idea that all of these people would be going scattered and running, and then they had a secondary sniper plan is really disturbing. The other really disturbing part is, think about this. These doggone drones are so easy to get and make and produce that if they send 1,000 drones at once, you can't get them all. And that's so simple for people without huge military budgets. It's very frightening, number one. Number two, Gavin Newsom is complaining that he's being investigated by the DOJ at Trump's direction. He and his wife, mostly his wife, were being investigated by the DOJ during the Biden presidency. That's not out there like it should be. And the fact that she made $2 million off California schools last year is not out there either. So all of these things are pertinent. And if you and I don't talk about it, Jared, nobody will.
Fair enough. That's a big story, too, that I'm sure we'll be following, because sort of underlying all of that was Gavin Newsom sort of soft launching his presidential campaign.
Yes. He's coming after me because I'm running for president. Yeah. Well, so was Biden coming after you because you were running for president. Always a pleasure, Jared. God bless you.
Yeah.
Jared Halpern, Fox News correspondent, WJR contributor. We have to buy them new phones because that thing was breaking up a lot. That wasn't us. That was that phone. Yeah. All right. We're underway. And happily, thank you to Steve Gregorian. We're at the Motor City Casino. And it's the Detroit Economic Club featuring the one and only Diane Swank, the same Diane Swank we used to have on all the time when I was doing the morning show. And speaking of the morning show, Lloyd Jackson was here and did the business briefs, another place of honor for WJR. Glad we're all together here in the family at 1244. As we continue in focus on 760 WJR, happy to welcome Marie Osborne reporting on the county road officials saying two adopt-a-road signs along Orchard Lake Road in West Bloomfield Township were removed over the weekend after drawing some strong reactions from residents. And WJR's aforementioned Marie Osborne reports on the latest developments in the controversy. Good afternoon, Marie.
This story has been brewing since the weekend when I first spotted it on social media, people commenting on this. So the signs read, "Next Mile, Voices for Palestinians." They resemble those standard highway markers. They were placed through the Road Commission for Oakland County's Adopt-a-Road program. It allows organizations to sponsor roadway cleanup and receive recognition signage. County officials approved the application. They assigned the location, installed the signs as part of the program. Commission spokesperson Craig Bryson says the sign request came from a West Bloomfield resident, and it was approved by the Road Commission at the end of October 2025. So that was several months ago. Bryson said the Road Commission took the sign down out of interest of safety before the county executive Dave Coulter called on the commission over the weekend to renew the sign placement. In a statement, Coulter noted West Bloomfield's significant Jewish population and the fact that the sign was awfully close to Temple Israel Synagogue, which was attacked on March 12th by a Dearborn Heights man that the FBI said was Hezbollah-inspired act of terror. The township acknowledged the issue in a public statement. In response, the Michigan chapter on the Council of American Islamic Relations, the executive director there, Dewald Walid, accused Coulter of making a biased attempt to silence voices in support of Palestinian humanity. So officials note that the Adopt the Highway program rarely sparks debate, but this has caused a lot of debate in the community.
Aye, aye, aye. But the request to put that sign up...
October. Last year.
In October was long before the attack on the temple.
Yep.
But people still were feeling awkward and concerned because it was just about 2 miles from Temple Israel.
Very close. Very close. And, you know, that was just, it was very close and people just felt it was extremely insensitive. But this was done many, many months before that incident occurred.
And this is the way it works, Adopt-a-Road program. Individuals or organizations volunteer to clean trash from a designated section of road at least twice a year. And they can, at least at this point, they were able to put any language they wanted submitted by the applicant as long as it was not obscene.
Right.
Boy, this is a tough one, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And the people that I knew who were posting about this over the weekend were just like horrified, like how could this happen? And, you know, as the story started to develop and, you know, we got to know more details, especially since this was done many months ago, then people started to, you know, have a different understanding of it. And, you know, of course, this all comes down to a freedom of speech, too. You know, all this organization has the right to sponsor this piece of roadway or a piece of roadway, just like anybody else can. You and I could do the same thing. But this particular placement, this was all just terrible timing. Terrible.
Terrible timing, but it was done long before, so it had nothing to do with it. And it didn't say anything. It wasn't attacking Israel or anybody. It was basically saying, as I understand it, next mile, voices for Palestinians.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep, that's it. Boy, that's exactly what it said.
I mean, they have every right to do that. It's unfortunate that it's all worked out to be this way. It's unfortunate that it's just 2 miles from Temple Israel and that immediately people jumped on the idea that this was done after that or because
on
of it.
On purpose, yes.
Yeah, it wasn't any of that. All right, quick question. Not to throw you a curveball, but here it comes,
Marie. Here it comes.
City Council was talking about a curfew, which I think they've had every year for fireworks night. What's the latest? Because they were going to talk about it again this morning.
I have not gotten an update on what was happening with that. They have been thoroughly debating this, you know, and of course, public comment is really important to all this. I'm not sure that they had this every single year of the fireworks, but they did have it in the past. It's not something brand new.
I remember it in the past. Mike?
Well, I think they're trying to make the curfew earlier this year.
8 o'clock?
Yeah, instead of 10 o'clock.
10 o'clock.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't remember what it was. We should maybe give Tony Michaels a call because obviously he's concerned about this and we're all concerned. We want a safe haven, as always, for the fireworks. And whatever's happening with these teen takeovers and wearing black and doing all of that, we don't want or need that in the Detroit area. And we've been pretty good about avoiding it. And so we'd like to continue to avoid it. You know, what else? I don't know what else to say.
And they had a problem just this weekend in Dearborn Heights with their spring festival there. And
right.
Danielle Mason was there with her mom.
Yep.
And
she described
what it was like. It was scary. It was scary.
And they turned people away and they shut it down.
Yes.
And Dearborn Heights said, "You're messing with the wrong community, kids, because we're not going to take any of this." Well, let me tell you something. It's not going to be taken lightly in Detroit either. So maybe we'll get Danielle Mason and her mother to come. And, they can do the stand down. All right, Riri. It just occurred to me. I don't know why. Marie Osborne, WJR's Director of Community Affairs and News. Way to go, Marie. Thank you for that update. Yeah, we'll hear more about it. I guarantee it. And we're going to hear more, too, from City Council and the curfew for fireworks night. Sad that we even have to talk about things like this, but we do on WJR. And we thank Ryan Goldberg for that sponsorship always for these great events. And we thank Steve Gregorian of the Detroit Economic Club for inviting us. We're the only media outlet invited like this, and we're live from the Detroit Economic Club with our relentless positive radio here at the Motor City Casino. Mike Parsons, our executive producer, Danielle Mason, Queen of the Switches, Rich Luzinski, keeping track of the WJR traffic and weather first, and Ray Templin as our engineer, keeping all things happening here with our relentless positive radio. Diane Swank, who is the woman of the hour, the keynote speaker, joined us to start the show off, and it was great to catch up with Diane, who used to be with us on the morning show on a regular basis, and she's still doing a great job. By the way, you have a chance to win a trip to see Lionel Richie and Earth, Wind, and Fire in the city of your choice. We've got your flights, hotel concert tickets, and premium VIP lounge access covered. It's your chance to sing along all night long with Lionel Richie and Earth, Wind, and Fire. The prize provided by Live Nation. All you need to do to qualify and to possibly get in on this winning way is to text this hour's national keyword, MARKET, to 95819. That's MARKET, M-A-R-K-E-T, to 95819. And then we're going to text you back to confirm your entry. Data and messaging rates may apply. Please don't text and drive. You can play four times each weekday for four chances to win, official rules and more at WJR.com. All right, want to get that out there. Once again, Lloyd Jackson had the honors of doing the business briefs, which truly is an honor, and we appreciate that. We don't ever take any of this stuff for granted. We talked a little bit ago with our correspondent about the FBI saying it thwarted a possible threat to the UFC event in Washington. That's mind-blowing.
Yeah, and I don't think I've heard if a particular group was behind it, but as you mentioned, it sounded like they had a lot of resources. They had drones. They had snipers strategically placed because the plan was to attack nearby buildings with the drones. And then as people were, it's very diabolical, as people were trying to get out, they had snipers stationed around. And I'm like, what? Was this just like an unaffiliated group of internet wackos, or was this like a terrorist group?
Well, let me tell you something that's an extremely important note. And that is, we always say, if you see something, say something, do something.
Right.
And in this case, it was the mother of a 19-year-old boy who was involved in this mess.
Wow.
And she didn't like what she was seeing and hearing, and she informed authorities. She contacted the authorities. What if she had not?
Right. Who knows what would have happened? And we hear this on a semi-regular basis, that somebody finds something iffy or off when it comes to family. I'm sure it's a tough phone call to make, but you got to make it.
You got to make it. And she should be lauded for making that phone call and preventing what would have been horrific.
Right, because if you think about it from the family member's perspective, they're also saving this person from a much worse penalty from life in prison. You know,
right.
Maybe if you intervene, this person can be rehabilitated and get their life back. But once they go through with the unthinkable, their life is over as well.
Marie, earlier this last hour, that Detroit officials are considering proposed curfew change for the annual fireworks show. I do not know if it's happened. I do not know, and you'll be able to find that, Mike. You're very fast on the computer. If anything's been reported yet, we will pass it along. An incredible Air Force B-52 bomber crash in California. I've never seen anything quite like it. This plane was not that far off the ground, I believe,
right,
just taking off. And there's virtually nothing left,
yeah,
of this huge airplane.
Yeah, I mean, I think you said it. You said it best. I mean, it's literally, and not to minimize it or be graphic here, but it's a charred black spot on the ground.
Yeah,
like what happened?
How could that? I mean, it just, there's like nothing there, and it happened so quickly. And I would imagine the firefighters were there immediately. It's right at the takeoff.
Yeah, I don't even think they left the airport property.
No.
So what the heck happened?
I don't know. And here's the other thing. I don't know if anyone's talking about this, but they keep saying this was a test flight. Well, if it's a test flight the way they usually do test flights, that means there are a whole bunch of people back on the ground, mm-hmm, in a little room with a bunch of screens and meters and computers and whatever, and they're watching every moment of that plane, and I would think it starts right at the takeoff. And if that's the case, they should know pretty quickly what went wrong.
Yeah, eight people dead. And
very sad.
Yeah, and I'm looking at, I mean, this burn mark on the ground, it goes on for a while.
It does, and yet they felt compelled to use the term, this was an unsurvivable crash. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing there.
Yeah, I mean,
but a black mark.
Yeah, I mean, if you see the picture with it's unsurvivable, which, you know, my first thought is, you know, did this catch fire before they hit the ground? But looking at just how wide and how long this black mark is, it looks like the plane at least skidded for a good while before It stopped.
Part of my job is watching the national news. I watch all three of them. I watch in this order, NBC, ABC, CBS. That's not the – well, it is kind of the order.
Of the ratings?
The ratings are ABC, NBC, CBS. But I watch them in that order. I don't know why. I always have. And the only guy that got this story right was Tony DeCoppo last night. That horrific story in Brazil of a woman who thought she was going bungee jumping. And ABC and NBC both said they forgot to attach the safety strap. No, no, there is no safety strap.
Just the
strap.
There
is a bungee cord.
Yeah.
That's what they forgot to attach. And only Tony DeCoppo got that right. Mm-hmm. They failed to even attach the doggone bungee cord. She was there to do a bungee jump, and out of the three men, not one of them decided they should attach the bungee cord to her, and they threw her off the bridge with nothing attached to her.
Right. And it sounded like they thought they were joking, like they threw her off kind of as a joke, thinking it was attached. But it's like, why? Like, how does humor even?
I don't know. I didn't know the humor part. I didn't see that. I thought that they, as soon as they threw her, they kind of went, "Oh,
yeah,
wait a minute."
Or maybe she was, maybe she like was getting cold feet. She got up there, but like,
I don't know.
It was supposed to be, in jest or a playful maneuver.
Oh my God!
And why are you even? Why are you anything but serious?
Yeah, I hadn't heard that. Well, they're all arrested for murder.
Good.
And they should be.
And whoever they work for needs.
Yep. Well, that's the problem. You do these things in other countries. Mm-hmm. You know, we can complain a lot about America, but this is America, and we do have rules and regulations on things like that, and licenses and insurance and all the other stuff they don't have. All right, very quickly before we run out of time. A dear friend and a man loved and respected by everyone. Everyone. Tom Izzo is just suffering through what's going on at Michigan State. The story uses the term Tom Izzo disgusted by, quote, self-inflicted losses of the MSU president and the athletic director. I feel so sorry for Tom Izzo.
Well, I mean, you're Tom Izzo. You've been right now. You're pretty much one of the only stabilizing forces.
He is
at
the
Michigan
only
State.
Stabilizing force, and has been for a number of years now.
And you know, he said that we lost someone who could have been the best president,
a great president.
Yeah.
And from everything I could tell, and we've had him on, Jay Batt was a great athletic director.
Yeah.
Now they have a chance to do a do-over. Let's see what they do with what they come up with.
Well, and Tom Izzo said that he's not going to speak about it at length at this time, but he will soon. So
I feel sorry for Tom because the guy has worked so hard in so many ways and been such a good positive influence on so many kids beyond basketball.
Well, and then you worry because when the – you know, the fundraising initiative or whatever that they started, he said, this is going to extend my career by a few years. Now you've been there for as long as Tom Izzo has been, you know, is he just going to be like, well, you know, not the heck with it, but maybe you won't have Tom Izzo for as long as you might have if things were more stable over there.
Who knows? Don't know. But I love that man, and I'm not alone. We continue in Focus Live. Economic Club, Motor City Casino, Relentless Positive Radio. Thank you, Steve Gregorian, for having us. And thank you for being tuned in Monday through Friday from noon till 2, right here on WJR. 121 760 WJR, retired Detroit Police Assistant Chief. Very colorful Steve Dolent is with us. You like the way I'm doing that, Steve?
Yeah, I'm not wearing my boots, but thanks.
No, but you are colorful.
Someone laughed in the background. Oh my God!
Yeah. Sorry, Steve, that was me.
So, okay. and the reason we have you on is because you speak your mind.
I do.
Are not encumbered like everybody else who has a job that they have to worry about losing.
Thanks, I have a job. Thanks. Okay.
Do you have a job?
Okay.
Wait a minute. Do you have a job?
Actually,
I thought you were just.
I do have a part-time job.
Okay, well, good for you. Can you tell us what it is, or is it safer for you not to tell us?
Well, I work for the Archdiocese of Detroit.
I almost said, oh, my God, which would have been very appropriate.
It would have been very appropriate. scary,
all
isn't
right,
it? Okay.
Yeah, let's move away from that right now.
let's do that.
Let me just say,
right.
The Archdiocese of Detroit has no say in what we're about to talk about. Okay,
geez, I know
now
that.
I walked this into a hole. Okay.
Yes, you did. Right. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, all right. Well, anyway, you got to be proud of Dearborn Heights and the Dearborn Police Department. Because they said, and they were right, those teens picked the wrong city to try to do a takeover of a festival over the weekend. Talk to me.
I think it was awesome. They have, well, and Dearborn and Dearborn Heights had always provided cadets or explorers. When I was at St. Sebastian, they had explorers in groups of two and cadets, and they patrolled the area, and they were the eyes and ears of the festival, and they did a good job. The fact that Dearborn Heights had all these other communities, including U of M Dearborn, ready to go was amazing. And I was very impressed that they shut it down. How many arrests did they make? Do we know offhand?
No.
Okay.
I do not.
But still,
yeah.
they shut it down. They're like, this is our festival, not yours. You don't belong here. Get the hell out. And that was great, I thought.
You know, this is happening more and more. Look, this is the Spirit Festival is one of Dearborn Heights' oldest community and family-oriented traditions. Within the sound of my voice, the wonderful people of the Old West End in Toledo, Ohio, just went through the same damn thing.
I know, and that's the sad part about it. And there's ways just to stop some of this violence and stuff. You know, these kids come in there, and at one festival I was at, you couldn't go in near the rides unless you either had a bracelet for so many tickets. You want to come in here, you're going to spend your money, we're going to keep an eye on you. Oh, and you can't bring a backpack in either. So you can't bring fireworks or guns and stuff. Stuff like that. And tells people, they mean business. This is for fun. There's kids, delinquents, and criminals. We don't want the criminals.
I have some good news just coming in.
Go ahead.
And that is the Detroit City Council voted 6-2 today to approve a superseding curfew for minors in parts of downtown and along the riverfront during this year's Ford fireworks. Detroit Police First Assistant Chief Franklin Hayes told the council that the expanded curfew for minors affected on June 22nd will remain in place until 6 a.m. the following morning. It's requested annually by the police department to ensure the safety of the popular downtown event. Quote, I do support the ordinance. I supported it last year, and I'm going to continue to support it because it is responsible, District 2 Councilwoman Angela Whitfield Calloway said prior to Tuesday's vote. The whole intent is to keep people safe. So there you are. That's good news. Tony Michaels.
I have a question.
Yes.
I have a question, though.
Yeah.
They usually have to have like a chaperone or whatever. Is it 18 or 21 to be the adult with the kids? Did they mention that at all or not?
I believe 18? It's 18.
Okay. I'd prefer a little older.
What Mike said it was 18.
Yeah, he said, yeah. I prefer
you think
a little
it should
older,
be 21?
I mean, okay. Okay, so I'm 18 and you're 15 and I'm an idiot. You're going to follow me because I'm an idiot. I'm your older brother, right? But if I'm 21... Okay.
Oh,
well,
Steve, I'm sorry.
You were an idiot. I was.
I misunderstood your question.
Wait a minute. There's a correction here.
I misunderstood Steve's question. I thought he meant, is the curfew for people 18 or 21?
The curfew is for people under 18.
Okay.
Can be chaperoned by an adult. And what he's asking is, do they consider an 18-year-old chaperone an adult or a 21 and older?
21-year-old.
That I don't know.
I prefer an older chaperone. Okay, I would prefer an older chaperone because again,
sure.
You're 18.
Yeah.
You're right out of high school. You're 2 weeks, you know, 2 weeks out of high school, and now you're the adult?
Right.
Come on.
Right. And you were reflecting back on when you were 18 and saying you were a knucklehead.
Well, I still am. But when I was 18, you could actually buy liquor. Remember those days?
I do not remember anything about my youth.
Oh, okay.
I do remember this.
Fair enough.
3-2 beer from Canada.
Yes, I never drank it
because I never had a taste for beer, whether it was 3-2 or fully loaded. It was never for me.
Okay, fair enough. We'll go.
Boone's Farm apple wine was probably my drink of choice.
And Annie Green Springs too.
Oh well, now you're really spreading me out here. MD40. I don't even know MD40.
It was a dollar a bottle back then. Remember that? It was a dollar a bottle
of
wine.
Dollar a holler. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're showing our
age. And we lived to tell about it.
Yes, we did.
You and I were in cars with metal dashboards and no seatbelts. And we lived to tell about it. I don't know how.
Crazy concept.
Yeah, yeah. But this is something we don't need. We do not need these teen takeovers.
I agree.
If they want attention, we'll give it to them. We've done it. I've raised millions of dollars in the past for the police athletic league. PAL is there.
Sure.
There are all kinds of things for kids to do, to have fun and use their energy and all of that. They don't need to go out and break laws and cause trouble. They're going to get in trouble for themselves.
Or their parents could slap them upside the head and say, don't embarrass me. Can I say that?
Yeah, you can say it, but I fear
that slapped upside the head back in the day.
I'm guessing several times, Steve. I'm just guessing. But here's the thing. No, I'm sorry. You set me up.
Okay.
I knock him down.
I did.
This is like having Dave Rieger back in the chair and being able to beat him up. But seriously, the fact of the matter is I totally forgot what I was going to say. I don't remember. It doesn't matter. It wasn't important.
I just slapped your kid upside the head and get their attention. That's all.
You did.
Not beat him up. Just get your mind right.
I know what I was going to say, that I'm afraid more parents, because now they both feel they have to work because of all the things we want, but we get a lot of stuff we don't need. If I could have half the money back from all the stuff I wasted money on, I'd be rich. But forget that. I'm afraid parents don't slap them upside of the head, and that's just an expression. I'm not suggesting physically beating your child. But what I'm saying is that, unfortunately, parents feel they have to take the kid's side because they're not there for them most of the time. So when there's an opportunity, it's us against them when it shouldn't be.
But they can say no once in a while. They
have
to.
If they want their kids to grow up and be good people, they have to.
I agree.
All right, I'm glad we solved all that.
I'm glad we did, too.
All right, Steve.
It's always a joy talking to you. It's always an experience.
It's always our joy and experience.
I'm sure it is.
Steve Dolot, who can be found at the Archdiocese of Detroit, who would have ever guessed it, retired Detroit Police Assistant Chief, who tells it like it is, here in Focus with Paul W. Smith on WJR. And from the lips of Dr. Robert Livernois, just a couple minutes ago on our 250th anniversary, as the United States prepares to celebrate this 250th anniversary of our founding next month, Fifth Third Bank is marking a milestone of its own. For 168 years, Fifth Third has helped Americans buy homes, start businesses, build communities, and plan for what comes next, serving as a catalyst for economic growth through some of the most consequential chapters in the nation's history. And in fact, Steve Davis, the region president for Michigan at Fifth Third Bank, is here at this DEC event, and it's nice to have you sitting across from us.
Always a pleasure, Paul.
Everything seems to be going well. You had the Fifth Third chairman and CEO, Tim Spence, alongside the board of directors and others, ringing the opening bell in the New York Stock Exchange just days ago. What is it? The 12th of June. And here we go. And you've taken over Comerica, and you've grown, and you've done a lot of things.
The ringing the bell will always be a trivia question the same day that the SpaceX IPO happened. So.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll always be remembered.
That's an interesting one.
Yes. Yes, it is. But how are things going for you at Fifth Third? Obviously going pretty well.
Things are going great. Things are going great. A lot to be excited about. We are still in a very busy time getting ready for Customer Day 1, which will be Labor Day weekend, and that's when all of the legacy Comerica customers will transition onto Fifth Third platforms and the changes in the banking centers, et cetera. But overall, I'm super excited. I think that there is so much positive going on. It's a great time for us.
Fifth Third is a bank that's long on innovation, as long as its history, since 1858, helping individuals, families, businesses, and communities grow through smart financial services that improve lives. And isn't it funny? All of the incredibly good things that Fifth Third Bank has done. Mm-hmm. One of the biggest questions I'm guessing you get is when does Comerica Park get renamed Fifth Third Park? Am I right or wrong about that?
It is always one of my top three questions.
What are the other two?
The first question is usually, are you okay? And they ask that is,
well,
like,
nice.
How are you doing? How are you feeling about it? Is it a good thing in your mind, et cetera?
Yeah.
The second one is generally some variation of how am I doing? So they want to know, is my branch still going to be there? Are you going to treat my business differently? Do I have the same team helping me? And then the third question is always, hey, about that ballpark, when am I going to – and in a way, it's incredibly flattering for me. It's one of the longest tenured ballparks out there in terms of naming rights.
Is it really?
26 years this year.
Wow.
And I never fully appreciated how big of a deal it is with the community, the name. It matters to them a lot. So I'm excited. I think to answer your question, though, we will probably – have some kind of a reveal before the end of the season. My guess is, August, September at the latest. Mm-hmm. And I'm really excited about it. We've got, five more years on our current deal. That takes us to 2034.
You're assuming the Comerica deal because you assumed Comerica.
Correct. 100%.
So you didn't have to step up and come up with a big boatload of more money, but you did have to come up with a boatload of money.
Well, we have to come up with a boatload every year for it, but
Yeah. I mean, it's not cheap.
No, it's not. It's not cheap, but it's...
Is it worth it?
I think so.
Okay.
I think so. There's a lot of people that didn't know the Comerica name that know it because of Comerica Park. And,
right.
And in Michigan, obviously, we've been in Michigan for 177 years now. So that's really well known. And a lot of the other markets that we're in didn't have the brand recognition. And so the ballpark was really, really good for us.
Yeah.
We have one more five-year extension on our deal that takes us to 2039. That'll be a great deal for Fifth Third. It'll be really good exposure, and obviously I'm very excited about it.
Yeah, well, we're excited for you. Anything else we should know before we let you go, Steve Davis?
No, we just heard from Diane Swank. I think she did a terrific job. And generally speaking, the economy is in pretty good shape, although it's uneven. But my customers on average are generally pretty optimistic about the back half of the year.
I'm glad that you mentioned Diane Swank, and I'm glad that it went well. Yeah, she gave a good, positive speech.
She does a nice job.
Here's a note I didn't see before, but I'm going to ask it now because I assumed it was going to be Fifth Third Park. Is there or Fifth Third Bank Park or something like that? Is there consideration of another name?
We have thought through a lot of names, and we got really smart marketing people. I think we are galvanizing around a name, and I would expect something in the next,
You're going to pay that kind of bread. You want to make sure they know who's paying that kind of money.
Exactly.
And it is Fifth Third Bank.
It is Fifth Third Bank. That's correct.
Yeah, I think that's probably going to be the name. I'm just guessing.
Yeah.
But you do whatever you want, Steve, and I know you will.
We will. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, as always.
As it's our pleasure, Steve Davis, Regional President, Michigan, Fifth Third Bank, here in Focus on WJR. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
We continue here at 1:45. No, I have my Affordability Matters pin. I do. My Blue Cross Blue Shield. It still matters. And I'm glad they got everything worked out and all of that, but affordability matters. That's a very important part of everything that we think about. Happy to say hi to senior reporter for Crain's Detroit Business, a magazine I get every week and love it. Dustin Walsh is here. Dustin, nice to see you, man.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Very sharp-looking guy for a magazine guy. You know what I mean? You look kind of television.
I like to jump out of the page a little bit.
Yeah, well, you do.
Yeah, you
do. The hair, the beard, the whole deal.
Well, thank you.
You just heard, we all just heard dishes crashing to the ground. But you just heard Diane Swank talk about the economy. Can you give me one or two takeaways that you felt were especially important?
Sure. Well, I mean, Diane's a hurricane of a person that just, I mean, she can talk to anybody on any stage. Really, it really came down to sort of this idea of inequality, right? I mean, I feel like we've been discussing wealth and income inequality for forever, but it seems like it's really coming to a head right now. And so she really kind of laid out the foundation of what's going on in the economy and how, you know, the top 20% of the earners are effectively supporting the entire economy, while the bottom 80% are languishing and not seeing the, you know, the GDP that's rising. They're not seeing the benefits from that. And I think you're seeing that sort of come out in ways. Everyone's very against AI and data centers right now, and I think that's, you know, sort of, as she pointed out, sort of the scapegoat that people are going after because it represents power and money to them. And so I think that's what you're seeing is this fractured economy. And Diane did a lovely job explaining that to the club.
What would be your take on our economy, Michigan's economy, in the next decade, Dustin?
I think I tend to agree with her. We're getting older. By the second, you know, we're aging really rapidly. Healthcare spending is through the roof because so many people are using it because we are getting older. We're not seeing children replace their parents in some of these higher end jobs. And so I'm a little fearful of our economy. And I mean, you know, you were up at Mackinac, I'm assuming. And, you know, up there, people were talking the house is on fire. And, you know, we're sort of living these consequences of a very fractured economy along with a purple political spectrum. Where every 2 years to 4 years, every good idea or bad idea gets tossed. And so we're not seeing sort of the solutions that we need to see and commit to over time to fix our broken education system, our broken economy.
Quickly, because we're unbelievably out of time, Michigan's marijuana industry, you wrote about it, your latest piece in Cranes. How's that doing?
Terribly. Overtaxed because of a new wholesale tax, and basically they're victims of their own success, oversupply. We could stop growing marijuana today, and we'd still have 2 to 3 million pounds left over by the end of the year.
Oh, boy.
Yes. So prices, if you're a consumer, it's the greatest market in the world because prices are the lowest in the nation.
Isn't that wild?
It is wild.
I gave you the signal, but I still don't hear the music. So I'm sure there's got to be some music in the background because we're out of time.
Okay.
And we thank you, Dustin Walsh, senior reporter for Crane's Detroit Business. We'll keep reading. You keep writing.
I will do the same. Thank you.
We appreciate it. All right. That's going to do it for us here on WJR. And we thank the team, Mike Parsons, Daniel Mason, Rich Luzinski, and Ray Templin for the help here. We'll talk to you again tomorrow. Regards, Paul W. Smith.